In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. This is the I Spy Radio Show, helping you to keep an eye on big government. This is also our last show in our series of shows on Hillary. Now, if you're still on the fence or know someone on the fence, I encourage you to visit our website, ispireradio.com, and you can download all of those shows and listen to them or share them with those people still on the fence. Since Obamacare is the signature legislation of the Obama administration that even Obama has called his legacy, that is the focus of today's show. It is also the defining element of these two campaigns, whether you want Hillary to continue Obamacare or Trump to stop it. You will get one or the other. I'd like to just read this one bit from Trump's policy since it sets the stage nicely. As it appears, Obamacare is certain to collapse of its own weight. The damage done by the Democrats and President Obama and abetted by the Supreme Court will be difficult to repair unless the next president and a Republican Congress lead the effort to bring much-needed free market reforms to the healthcare industry. But none of these positive reforms can be accomplished without Obamacare repeal. On day one of the Trump administration, we will ask Congress to immediately deliver a full repeal of Obamacare. However, it is not enough to simply repeal this terrible legislation. We will work with Congress to make sure we have a series of reforms ready for implementation that follow free market principles and that will restore economic freedom and certainty to everyone in this country. By following free market principles and working together to create sound public policy, that will broaden healthcare access, make healthcare more affordable, and improve the quality of the care available to all Americans. Now, if you've listened to this show, you know that I am a big advocate for a return to free market principles when it comes to healthcare. And by that, I don't mean market principles. I mean free market principles. The Democrats use some real subterfuge when it comes to talking about healthcare. Free market means a market unfettered by government intrusion. Democrats mean markets. Simply put, where people can buy and sell things, completely overseen by government bureaucrats, I should add. That is not free markets. That is not how you will save money because you don't have the normal market solutions and effects of a free market, where companies compete and their competition forces them to find efficiencies to lower prices and provide better care, where people can choose to buy. The choice whether or not to buy is the single largest weapon consumers have to drive down prices. These are the elements of a free market. What the Democrats espouse and what the Obamacare system has set up is not free market, not even close. Even worse, Obamacare is a massive expansion of government intrusion into your life. Obamacare was not just about fixing healthcare or about expanding access to healthcare or about getting more people insurance coverage. That's just how you or the government will pay for healthcare. Meanwhile, what you're paying for has changed dramatically. And perhaps most ironically, you're giving the government the ability to intrude into your life, and you're paying them to do it. Because once you give the government control over your health, you're opening the door to control nearly every other aspect of your life. To talk about healthcare, the impact of Obamacare, and the candidates' positions, I'd like to welcome our healthcare and insurance expert, Lisa Lettenmeyer. Lisa is an independent insurance broker. Her website is HealthSourceNW if you're in the market for insurance. And open enrollment just started, so now's the time to be looking for help. Lisa, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, Mark. Thanks for having me back.
So let's really start with sort of a situation overview here, the current state of healthcare and Obamacare and insurance. Yeah, by all accounts, it seems, Obamacare is really failing, although I guess it depends on what you look at. If you examine it from a cost perspective, it's definitely a failure since it was sold as supposedly saving money for everybody, but the costs are going up fast. However, if you look at it in terms of a massive expansion of government, including a march to a single payer, then it seems a wild success. So what are your thoughts on the current situation of healthcare and Obamacare?
Well, I think like you just said, it's all in your perspective. So you can easily argue that more people are covered. and getting services, but at what cost, to your point? So we, here in Oregon, for an example, we expanded Medicaid. So now 1 in 4 Oregon residents are on Medicaid. And again, that's great to give access to somebody, but first of all, can we afford 1 in 4 being on Medicaid? And secondly, what kind of care does Medicaid give them? And then in addition, you've got people that are potentially eligible for subsidies, and that's great. Again, people that can't afford premiums, if we can assist them, that's fine. But as our health insurance premiums are now escalating even higher, understand that we, the American people, pay for those subsidies through our federal tax dollars. So as those subsidies keep increasing every year because the cost of premiums are going up, somehow, some way, the American people are paying for that in their taxes.
Yeah.
So, and to then go on with your other point, it is absolutely a bigger expansion of the government into our lives. And it was interesting how it was perpetrated, because really, as an insurance broker, what I get to see is how these policies have been changing and the system of receiving care is changing and the comments I'm getting from medical practitioners. So we've, you know, the Affordable Care Act revamped the billing and coding system and went from somewhere around 30, 40,000 billing codes, diagnosis codes, to somewhere in the area of 120, 140,000. And wow. If you ask any medical professional like I have, that's just an increase in work. It didn't give us anything, but now our doctors are spending more and more time on data collection. The government has financial incentives where they will give our insurance carriers additional monies if they can encourage consumers to come in for preventative care and do, which is great, but do these health checks, questionnaires. And if the doctor identifies you with 2 or more chronic conditions, such as blood pressure, cholesterol, and can put you onto a med, and then the carrier can figure out some checks and balances to ensure you're on the med, they're actually paid more money. So it's interesting, our carriers are looking for, or it's more attractive for them, to have kind of that middle-aged person who might have a few things going on. They don't want them, you know, obviously if somebody's super sick, it's going to cost them a lot of money, but super healthy isn't as attractive either. So our government's kind of winding its way into lots of areas of our healthcare without people really understanding it.
Well, and that sounds so very socialistic too, where they're not only paying for things by the government, but they're trying to force people essentially to buy things that maybe they don't necessarily want. Because it, like you say, the medical professionals are being incentivized to push these services. Well, maybe you don't need that. And so it's this notion that the government has to keep driving the economy even in just this one industry.
Right. And it's a very big brother feeling. You know, in a perspective of my Medicare clients, because I serve both populations, individual health, which is pre-65, and then Medicare, which is 65 and older, I'll hear from my clients all the time who have Medicare Advantage plans that they're very, you know, they're off put because somebody will call their home and say that they're calling from the insurance carrier, and then they're really pushing to have that client, you know, allow them to come into their home and do what they call a home assessment. Mm. And that's, again, one of the things the government's encouraging to kind of track all of us and get data. But as a consumer, let's say you're a perfectly happy, healthy consumer who's very independent, having your insurance carrier call and say, we'd like to come to your home and do a home assessment, a health assessment, feels a little weird.
Yes,
but
very
weird. But I
will
say on the flip side of that, as I tell my clients, you can imagine that in some situations, right, if somebody was living by themselves and they were aging and not doing as well, it may be a benefit to have a medical nurse come out to their home to assess things. Is the place too dark? Are there things in their way that they're falling over? Is it too cold? Is there mold? Is it too hot because they don't have an AC in the summer? So there's absolutely arguments on both sides, but what I see is more of a one size fits all.
Yeah.
So we're
yeah.
moving away from patient centered, and we're moving into put everybody into the same basket.
Yes, and I just don't like that. I mean, there's that it does sound very intrusive, and it gets back to this notion that what I saw was really a danger with Obamacare is that when you give somebody control over your healthcare, you're really giving them control over every aspect of your life because you're not a consumer anymore. You're a liability to the government. Okay, we are up against break. Everyone stay with us. We're going to have lots more with Lisa Lettmeyer talking about Obamacare.
Thank you.
And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, talking today to Lisa Lentmeyer. Talking about Obamacare. That is the defining element of the two campaigns, really, when it gets right down to it. You're either going to have Hillary, who wants to continue it and even expand it, or you've got Trump, who wants to replace and repeal. And Lisa, going into the break there, we were talking about this really interesting aspect of Obamacare, these home assessments, where you have these people come in to your home and assess things and kind of look at your lifestyle and the conditions of your home. To me, that just sounds really intrusive. But I have heard of such things, but in the past, they've been called Gestapo. They
right.
come
well,
in and look at these
and
things.
To clarify, those typically where you're going to see that happen is with a Medicare Advantage plan. So Medicare Advantage plans are rated with a star rating from the government of 1 through 5. And a big section of that rating, or how they get to the 4 or 5 star level where they can earn additional funding, is through the data collection of their clientele. So if they can encourage their consumers to come in for all of their preventative exams and tests, to take the questionnaires, and in many cases, one of the big issues is that home assessment. And again, I'm in your camp. It kind of unnerves me. A lot of my clients feel that way.
Yes.
But I can see in certain situations where that benefit could help somebody who really is on their own and aging and has some issues. But again, I go back to my statement. I don't want to see us go down the road of the one size fits all.
No.
We are moving away from patient centered and a doctor patient relationship to put everybody into the same bucket.
Yes. Some of that too, and it's not just the intrusion of it, but it's also this notion that the government is gathering more and more information about you. And it's really a trend that you see really within business and marketing, especially, where they want to have all of these different data points on you. Certainly, we have seen that in the WikiLeaks documents, where the head of Google was approaching the Clinton campaign, where they were going to have these massive databases on every single voter, where they would have all of these different data points, the magazines that they would read, the websites that they visit. I mean, just on and on down the list. And I remember when Obamacare was set up, that was actually kind of hinted at, that you would have this kind of intrusion, really, with these. You would essentially be able to sell some of these data points to marketers. Do you see any aspects of that?
I've not seen that because I'm not inside of the insurance carrier. I'm not in that world specifically. Where I've seen things is even with my own family and friends, we'll have conversations about when we go in for our annual routine checkup or whatever that might be, the questionnaires that you're handed. So my husband, you know, several months ago was in, and he comes home and he says, well, that was interesting. And I go, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, I had this health questionnaire. So I answered all these health questions. And then at the very bottom, it was asking if I owned a gun.
Yes.
And
yes.
If I do, where I keep that gun and how I keep it. And I go, well, you didn't answer those questions, did you? He goes, well, yeah, I thought I had to. And I'm like, no, you don't have to answer anything. And then I went in, and my clinic didn't have those questions. But at the very end of my health questionnaire, there were questions like, you know, do you feel anxious or stressed? Have you had thoughts of suicide? There was like 3 or 4 questions with regard to.
You should have answered each one of those questions only when I think of Hillary.
Well, I had to laugh as I'm sitting in the waiting room because honestly, if you're American and you're working a job and taking care of your kids and your family and paying your mortgage and then watching the news, I don't know how you're not stressed and anxious.
Yes.
But so, you know, it's the concern is where do they take that data?
Yes.
So as a gun owner, do they now have me on a list? And if I show up with some kind of depression or anxiety, are they going to come and take my gun away? There's all different areas where they could theoretically take that data. And again, it's the one size fits all. It's the idea of bring them in, ask them the questions, identify the potential chronic conditions, even if they're on the low end, and put them on a maintenance drug, which works for some people. There are absolutely cases where you're not going to be able to control that blood pressure or cholesterol necessarily with lifestyle changes. I absolutely see that all the time. But on the flip side, there are times where we could, you know, just by leaving, you know, retiring and having less stress in your life, I've seen people come off of a lot of their medications because of the stress was causing it, changing their lifestyle, exercising more, changing lots of things. But the course seems to be identify it, put a drug on it, and maintain that drug. And that, I don't feel, in the long term, is a good place for us to be especially given the rising cost of prescription drugs.
Sure, absolutely. You mentioned that these home assessments, they will come in and look at aspects of the housing itself, for example, air conditioning, whether there's mold and that sort of thing. So when they do these kinds of assessments, if they find a problem with the home itself, who pays for the upgrades if they feel that this is something that the patient needs?
So the home assessments on the Medicare Advantage plan is more focused on the health, but certainly if the nurse is there, the doctor's there, and you're going to see, you know, this person keeps coming in for fractures and some falls, it's because maybe their lighting is not good. So that's something that they can talk about in certain aspects. They might be able to go back and say, here's what we think would fix it. Where you're going to see a lot more of that is under our Medicaid CCOs. That was the intent of the CCOs, was to say, let's look more deeply at those Medicaid beneficiaries and see if there's something that's creating the problem that's bringing them in to healthcare, such as not having an air conditioner in the dead of summer when it's really hot in Eastern Oregon. So that was the intent there. So it depends on which level of care you're getting and how they're doing that. But those CCOs do have the flexibility to utilize some of those fundings to pay for things like an air conditioner if it's warranted.
Hmm. Okay, that's a pretty good place to take a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll be talking more about Obamacare with Lisa Lentmeyer. Do you want to repeal, replace, or keep giving away your freedom? And welcome back. We're talking to Lisa Lentmeyer. She is the owner of Health Source Northwest. She is an independent insurance broker and our go-to expert for insurance and healthcare. Her website, if you'd like to go visit, is healthsourcenw.com. And Lisa, we've been talking about this really fascinating aspect of these home assessments, and really it plays right into how Hillary, I think, sees the economy, where a lot of it just stems from the government. And so we were talking about, you know, what happens if there's an air conditioning unit that needs to be fixed, or there's some mold and all that sort of stuff. And so suddenly you have this huge expansion of government and this commingling. You have this a database of people on their behaviors and their housing needs and so forth, and that information becomes available to government contractors. And lo and behold, you're paying for things like that from funds that were originally designated for healthcare.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it depends on which level of healthcare or insurance you're talking about. So in individual health and group health, it's all based upon, you know, have the clients come in for the preventative, which is why it's a zero cost, and haven't filled those questionnaires. As we move into Medicare, you have a little bit different list of preventative exams and services are covered at 100%. But in addition to that rather lengthy list of coming into the doctor, they encourage you to allow them to come out and do a home assessment. And the only way I could think of that you'd need to do a home assessment is looking at what's going on in the home environment. Because if the client's already come in for their preventative exams, I don't know that you're going out there specifically just for that. And then in the CCO world, we take it that step further, where the CCOs get to determine if there's ways to change the health outcomes, and maybe it is a lifestyle situation. So I can argue both ways, but to your point, it just kind of starts. I call it the slow creep, right?
Yes.
So we just keep getting more and more data, and then there's more and more things where they're basically going to steer your reactions or your behavior based upon the data that they have on us. And that's easy to see. The government does that all the time. They incent you to retire by giving you tax deferral, you know, accounts. They encourage you to put away for healthcare costs with an HSA by giving you tax-free access to that money for health services. They encourage you to buy long-term care insurance because they know that there's no way that they can afford to take care of all of us if we all run out of money. But they encourage you to buy long-term care insurance by giving you tax advantages to that or protections of your assets. So, and again, good and bad, but understand that as the government's got more and more information on us, they are using that, just like
yes.
the retailers do, to guide our behaviors.
Yes.
So,
and doesn't it help if you just happen to have donated to the right party? Because, I mean, if you're doing business with the government, you can suddenly get information on all these consumers, and there's all these lucrative contracts out there that you can go do repairs or installing AC units and so on. I mean, it is the Clinton business model. Unfortunately, though, I would like to move on a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about what life was like before Obamacare, because and before government took such a heavy hand in healthcare itself. It seems so long ago, but I really remember being able to go into the doctor, pay for a visit that I could afford, and then walk out and buy prescriptions if I needed them. Was healthcare and insurance a simpler, easier system back in the day before the government decided to fix everything?
I think that also comes down to what state you lived in. So I just had this question posed to me by another reporter recently, and they were asking about that. Well, isn't this better than what it used to be? And here in Oregon, we were unique. And I always argued, even throughout this whole process of moving on to the ACA, that we should have just looked at Oregon's model and figured out a way to improve that. Because here in Oregon, people had tons of choices and access. You either could obtain coverage through your employer, or if you left your employer, you had COBRA. If the COBRA exhausted, you had state continuation. If you were out on your own and you didn't want the COBRA or state continuation, you could apply for individual. There was an underwriting process, but it wasn't outrageous. Some states had an egregious underwriting process. Ours was pretty nominal. I mean, it made sense. We had a pre-existing exclusion of 6 months. So if you waited till you got sick and then bought insurance, you know, they made you wait for 6 months because guess what? We don't wait till something happens to buy the insurance. It'd be like waiting to buy auto insurance until you have a car accident. Doesn't make sense.
Right.
So we had that. We had a very competitive market, tons of carriers. We had over 10 carriers. The plans themselves, again, you had to apply for them and get underwritten, but you could choose a very rich, well-written plan, or you could go bare bones, or anywhere in the between, but that was your choice. Did you want to buy a plan that had mental health coverage? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. There was carriers that offered it both ways, but you had choices on that based upon what you thought your needs were or what your finances were. And if you were not
And let me interrupt you there for a second, too, because from the business side of things, as an insurer, you could decide what worked for you and whether or not you'd be able to be profitable offering certain plans and whatnot.
Exactly. So as a carrier, you could decide, do I want to offer rich plans or bare bones or in between or all of those? And quite honestly, most of our carriers offered all of those options. But the consumer got to choose. And we had networks that were huge. Most of the carriers offered networks that were covered the majority of the doctors and hospitals in the state, and you had plans that sold in every county in the state. If you didn't qualify, if you were denied, we had a very robust, very well-written high-risk pool that you got exceptional coverage in. If you couldn't afford coverage, we had Medicaid. It wasn't funded as well as it could have been. Back in the day, Medicaid was really for children and pregnant women, and then the additional adults that were put on it were through a lottery system, so that was unfortunate. If you were truly, and I'll come back to that statement, but truly in poverty status, there should have been more money to that Medicaid program for those people. If you were above poverty but still struggling to pay your premiums, we had a premium assistance program called FEOP, Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, but it was never fully funded. It was a phenomenal idea, kind of similar to the subsidies that we have now, but it was better handled, I think, and it was easier to navigate and get through, and people didn't, you know, they didn't have to know that you had financial help. So when I talk about people that truly need to be on Medicaid, right now I've got concerns that there are people that get put on Medicaid that it's not really warranted. So the Medicaid requirement right now is in your current month. If you go to apply for an Oregon health plan, you'll say, here's what I'm making. If that dollar amount that you state is at or below the poverty level for you and or your family size, then you're automatically put on the Oregon health plan and you'll be on that for 12 months till you have to renew it. If at the end of that 12 months, when you go to file your tax return, if lo and behold, you weren't poverty status, right? That was far from the truth. There's no penalty that I'm aware of. I've asked this question several times. So there's abilities for people to game the system. I've got clients that say, well, I want to state my income because I live off of my IRAs and my 401k, but I don't want to state it so low that I'm on Medicaid because Medicaid isn't the greatest because I can't see my doctors, but I want to get some substantial subsidies. So I'm just going to play with my dollar amount that I'm going to estimate my income to be so I can get the maximum subsidies as possible, but not go on to Medicaid. So we're playing with the system, and that's not what it was intended to do.
No.
We need to help people that need help. And those that don't need it, we need to keep the cost down so that they don't eventually need help because they spend all their money on insurance premiums.
Right, exactly. So. Okay, let's take a break right there. Coming up, we'll be talking about Hillary's healthcare plans and then also Trump's. Stay with us. Lots more with Lisa Lettenmeyer talking about Obamacare. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson. We're talking today to Lisa Lettenmeyer. She is the owner of Health Source Northwest, and she is an independent insurance broker, and her website is healthsourcenw.com if you'd like to go visit that. And this is really the defining moment, I think, between the defining issue, I just should say, between the two campaigns. You will either continue with Obamacare, because that's what Hillary has said, versus Trump, who has said repeal and replace. And so, Lisa, let's talk a little bit about what's going on here with Hillary's plans. And, you know, as I looked at her website, she doesn't really have a plan. It really does just come down to continuing with Obamacare. Although, interestingly enough, I got to imagine there's a lot of people opening their mail lately, and they're getting this sticker shock seeing these prices going up. What is driving the costs up so fast with Obamacare right now?
Well, there's a lot of things that drive up the premiums. The reality is, and I always remind this to my clients because I have to deal with these conversations over and over again, health insurance premiums come from the cost of the health care claims the insurance carrier is paying for. So as claims go up, premiums have to go up with it. And when you tell an insurance carrier you're no longer allowed to deny or exclude anything, so somebody could wait to come to you until they're completely sick, and then you have to immediately, after a $300, $400 a month premium, start paying massive bills, that changes the dialogue. In addition, when the government says to the insurance carrier, you have to cover not just the basic health care that we had before, but we want you to cover everything under the sun, 100% of preventative tests and exams, including sterilization of women or birth control or breast pumps, you know, which, again, sounds great as a consumer. I get that. I'm a woman, but understand, not everybody wants those services or needs those services, but it's now embedded in every one of the plans. The same thing with mental health or prescriptions. And again, well, I'm sure people will argue, well, Lisa, we need those things. This is true, but some people feel like they don't need all of those services, but yet they're paying for it all because we've got back to that one size fits all. So the carriers are paying more. There was nothing really in the Obamacare legislation that directly tackled the cost of health care, whether it's your doctor's office, your hospital, your lab, an x-ray. In fact, I could easily argue that many things in the Obamacare law increased health care costs. So if you've increased the type of or the amount of diagnosis codes and billing codes exponentially, that meant doctors and the hospitals had to revamp their computer systems and train everybody and reteach the doctors how to isolate and code everything, which every doctor I talk to says that's been massive. If you have imposed new taxes on durable medical equipment, which was part of the Obamacare law, that increased costs for healthcare. If you've imposed new regulations upon regulations upon regulations to insurance carriers and employers, guess what? You just increased your cost of health care because the companies that are paying for our health insurance for us, whether it be the carrier or the employer, they had to incur more costs with their lawyers and revamping with administration. If you look at the Obamacare and what it did with prescription drugs, the idea was a great fix. We have this crazy drug coverage gap in the Medicare drug programs. Again, this is Medicare, not health. And they wanted to close that gap. Lofty goal. I completely support that. But how they went about doing it has basically, in effect, helped to increase drug prices for generics. And so if we look at medication costs, those are up exponentially. I found out recently from an insurance carrier that apparently now equity firms have figured out how to buy drug manufacturing companies. And now they're locking up all of the processing and creation of these drugs. And guess what? That's called a monopoly. Who allowed that to happen? Our government. So yeah, there's so much in the Obamacare law that actually added to the cost, and really not much at all that was meant to decrease the cost. And so when you look at your bill and your premiums are up, there's reasons for that. And the insurance carriers don't charge whatever they want. It has to be approved by your state insurance commissioner. Mm. And that's what we're facing.
Well, so with Hillary's plan, like I said, it's basically to continue Obamacare. Given what you're saying, do you ever see costs coming down?
Right now on this path, no. Because again, nothing was really done to curb the cost of health care. And there's lots of avenues where you could go about doing that. But we didn't build that in. And as far as Obamacare itself, we don't, in the industry, we're not seeing any stopping point. The premiums are going up because of what the carriers have to cover, and there's not enough teeth to make everybody buy insurance. So you've got a lot of the young and healthy didn't buy insurance. The penalties aren't significant enough to make them buy. And now I've got clients this year who've always bought health insurance for years and years. And now they're saying things to me like, Lisa, we don't qualify for a subsidy. My premium is going up by $300 a month for my family. Mm. How am I going to pay for this? And I've now got, you know, clients who are tax-paying, law-abiding citizens who've always carried insurance, really questioning if they have the ability to do it anymore because they don't qualify for these magical subsidies. And let's talk about the subsidies. Again, those are paid for by our tax dollars. So as the premiums go up, for those people who qualify for subsidies, the subsidies go up to pay the premiums. Where does that money come from? It comes from us, the American people.
Well, and what's shocking about that, too, is in some cases, I'm hearing people that they're paying like $1,200, $1,500 a month for, you know, their families. I mean, that's more than they're paying in mortgages. You know, we talked about earlier, back in the day sort of thing. Do you remember a time when insurance was more than your mortgages?
No, and I'll just give you some really rough numbers. This week alone, my family, my husband and I are in our late 40s. We've got a daughter. Our current coverage, and we go with a little bit richer plan, but our current coverage is costing us $1,050 a month, and we're going to go up to almost $1,300 for an insurance plan. I've got another family; they're in their late 30s. They've got some kids. Their new premium, if they stay where they're at, is going to be over $1,700 a month. And if they stay with that carrier, their network significantly changes, and it basically is going to end up having most of the doctors that they need to utilize being out of network. So we're going to have to move them someplace else, and sadly, I'll be able to fix the network issues, but I probably won't get that premium down by much.
Wow. Wow. Just real quick, what's your deductible on that?
My deductible on my current plan is $1,000.
Oh, that's not too bad then.
Not too bad,
some of these,
but still.
Some of these... Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
The numbers out there right now are just nuts.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go ahead and take a break. Coming up, we'll be talking about Trump's plan. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, helping you get a little more intelligence on big government. This is our final show in our series of shows on Hillary. Visit iSpyRadio.com and go to our archives. You can browse through those shows and be sure to share those with people, especially people that may be on the fence. We were talking about Hillary's plan there and all, you know, basically continuing Obamacare, and I kind of maybe had phrased that incorrectly on the way out. In terms of deductibles, what I should have said was out of pockets, because that's, to me anyway, the real tell is in terms of your actual expenses. And so what is that for you and your family?
Right. So on my plan, the out-of-pocket max is $7,150 for the individual and two times that for the family, meaning that, you know, if there's three of us, I could hit my out-of-pocket max of $7,150. My child could hit her out-of-pocket of $7,150. If that happened and my husband then needed services, his would be covered in full because the family at that point had hit their out-of-pocket max, which by law now is two times the individual out-of-pocket max. And those out-of-pocket maximums have definitely creeped up from at least the rich plans that we used to see. So for the most part, across the state here in Oregon, I think the lowest out-of-pocket max you might find out there is going to be somewhere between $5,000 and $5,500 for a gold plan. And then the highest an individual out-of-pocket max is allowed to be for this year in Oregon is $7,150. So That's what we're facing. That's on top of your premium.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was going. Is that you not only have $1,000-something a month, then on top of that you've got a out of pocket max another $15,000 roughly or $14,000. You're talking, you know, $26,000 if you have to actually use the insurance that you're paying so much for. I mean, that's pretty amazing. I do want to talk about Trump's solution here. He says that on day one he wants to repeal and replace Obamacare, and the main focus of that is replacing that with health savings accounts. Is this a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I'm going to answer that question in two stages. First of all, I think to be able to come in and repeal the Obamacare law immediately, that's more difficult than people understand. I'm not somebody who supported the law. I still don't support it. However, it's a big, massive law that took us, you know, it was passed back in 2011, and so we're quite a ways down the road. Things are intertwined. To just immediately repeal it would cause some calamity. So there needs to be more of a let's look at it and see how we can unwind some pieces, fix some other pieces, The health savings account, we've had those. Those actually were formalized back in 2003, and it was a great way for people to purchase a high deductible health plan, but then get some financial support from the government by being able to put aside funds that they might need to use to pay for that deductible, tax deductible, and then they could use it, if need be, tax-free. So it's right. kind of like an IRA on steroids.
Yeah.
So we've had those, and at first they were great because you could literally cut your premium in half or less than half, and after a while that money was sitting in your HSA, so who cares if you hit your out-of-pocket max? You were actually saving money on your premium.
Right.
We still have plans that operate that way, but the premiums are just not what they used to be. It's not as good of an option. It is still the place to go if you want the least expensive premium, but sadly, even those premiums are up. As an example, I've got a 62-year-old who is getting a $230 rate increase per month if she stays on her current plan that has a $4,000 deductible with copays, but that deductible was being modified down in her situation. And so rather than stay on a plan where she could go to the doctor for a copay or see a, get a medication for a copay, she's going to move to that HSA high deductible style, and she's still going to be paying $550 a month for a high deductible health plan as a 62-year-old, which is a big chunk of money.
Sure.
So the HSAs are a great concept. It's not going to be the only thing that you could do. There's other things that we're going to need to incorporate.
And that, I think, is what he means, is repealing Obamacare on day one and immediately replacing it with a health savings account. But over time, he is talking about adding other issues as well. I really do like health savings account. You know, I did some research on the healthcare industry, especially what is happening here in Oregon versus the states. And that the health savings account is one that a lot of people, a lot of economists were really in favor of, because it really does put people in charge of their own money, and that empowers them to then make decisions about their own health. And they decide, you know, maybe I don't need to go to the doctor for every minor ailment that comes up.
Right.
But one of the other aspects that certainly gets a lot of play is the notion of allowing people to purchase insurance across state lines. That is also in Trump's plan. What do you think about that?
To me, here in Oregon, I don't know that that's going to be a benefit for us. Oregon and Washington and even California, we've got some of the most stringent insurance regulations. So it's very difficult for a carrier to come into our state and get approved. And you've got carriers right now like United Healthcare and Cigna and Aetna who sell here in Oregon, but only on group plans. They could sell here for individual if they wanted to, but they don't. So I don't know that that's going to be saving grace.
But allowing that kind of competition, though, wouldn't that open up the insurance industry as well? When an Oregonian says, now, wait a minute, I'm paying $1,000 a month for my plan because you've got all of this stupid stuff attached to it, versus somebody in Idaho, they're getting their insurance that covers most of what I want for $200. Wouldn't that then force changes here in Oregon and Washington?
Well, but remember, health insurance carriers have to set premium prices based upon the state that they're selling in, and the regulations of those states, and also the cost of health care in that state. So it's not as easy as saying, hey, if we just open up state lines, we breed all this competition and everything's great. It does improve competition, but each of the 50 states have their own insurance regulation. And then the Obamacare law came over the top of all of that, and then each state has very different health care costs. And depending if you're in, you know, like in our state, we've got seven different rating areas that the insurance division allows our carriers. So if you take Oregon, which is not that big, we've divided it into seven different rating areas depending on where you're buying your plan, because the cost of health care is so significantly different.
Well, it's no wonder it is so expensive and so complicated. All right, everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Lisa Lettmeyer wrapping things up, talking about Obama. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, and our final segment now with Lisa Lettmeyer of HealthSource Northwest. Her website, if you'd like to go visit that, is healthsourcenw.com. And so I'd just like to wrap up things here, talking about Trump's plan. There's a lot there to unpack. A lot of it is very clever. We'll make sure that we link that up on iSpyRadio.com. Just look in the links mentioned section of today's website. You mentioned during the break there about you really like the fact of what he's pushing on the high-risk pool. Why don't you explain why that's such a great idea?
Yeah, I mean, Donald's got 5 points, and if you put all of them into enact, I think together they work actually really well. The high-risk pool is going to be important. If you repeal the Obamacare or change it, one of the biggest issues is going to be, of course, around that medical underwriting, which will panic people. Before the Affordable Care Act, only 35, I believe, of the 50 states had a high-risk pool, which means if you applied for individual insurance and were underwritten and denied, the high-risk pool in your state would cover you. Now, not all states had a great high-risk pool. Here in Oregon, we had an amazing one. So that's what I would want to see. I want to see us go back to underwriting, having a high-risk pool for a safety net, making sure it's a decent high-risk pool. Definitely, he's got some points in here on trying to work with the states to work with their Medicaid program within their state to make it specialized to their needs. Still figuring out, is there a way that we can help financially some people, help get them on their feet within paying for premiums? HSAs are a great concept. I think selling across state lines, we have carriers that do that now. They sell in multiple states. So I don't know if that's going to have a huge impact, but it certainly could increase competition in certain areas for sure. So if you look at all of his plan together, there's some good points in there. I think that we're moving in the right direction.
Well, I certainly hope so. And one other thing that he mentions here, he wants to maximize flexibility for states via block grants so that local leaders can design innovative Medicaid programs that will better serve their low-income citizens. What do you think of that?
Well, kind of interesting enough, I don't know if you're going to like this, but it almost sounds like he's talking about the CCOs. Hmm. And the idea of, depending on where you're at in the state, you need to really cater your care for that group of people to what their needs are, which could be completely different in Eastern Oregon versus Western Oregon, as an example, right? So I do actually like that concept. I think that, again, I don't like the idea of one size fits all, and we need to give back to the states and let them make decisions as to what's best for their citizens.
Yes. There are elements of the CCOs that are good ideas, but unfortunately with Oregon, it just made them too big and too extensive, and I don't think Trump's plan will get anywhere near that. Lisa, unfortunately, we're up against the time here with you. I want to thank you so much for weighing in on Obamacare.
I wanted to make sure that I said that his plan, again, all of it working together, I think would definitely have an impact.
Oh, I absolutely agree, especially when you compare the alternative. Again, Lisa, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
As I said at the top of the show, and as you heard throughout, the reason Obamacare matters so much is it opens the door to government controlling so much of your life. Hillary wants to continue and expand Obamacare. Trump wants to repeal and replace. This is the biggest difference between the two candidates, not only on a fundamental policy matter, but a matter of foundational belief. Do you believe in freedom or in government control? The last 8 years has brought an incredible expansion of government into every crevice of society. The EPA has gone from a watchdog agency to attempting to shut down entire industries, to partnering with environmental groups to attack farmers and ranchers and miners. The EPA is no longer a federal agency, it's a federal advocacy group. The IRS targeting conservative groups, threatening churches. The Department of Justice has become a shield for people breaking the law, as long as you're on the political left, and a weapon against conservatives. For all these reasons, if you consider yourself a patriot, you need to stop Hillary. And there is only one candidate who can do that. Throughout this presidential race, I have heard from people who just can't bring themselves to vote for Trump. The other thing I hear is that this is a vote between the lesser of two evils. Yes, every vote in every election is a vote for the lesser of two evils, because you are giving someone else power over you, who can do everything from fine you to putting you in jail. But the basic argument itself is a false one. The lesser of two evils argument says it's like a vote for either Hitler or Stalin, and that's a false comparison. It assumes that Hillary and Trump have identical goals, and that is simply not true. Hillary wants to continue the Obama track, and isn't that something? Obama has been softening up America for Hillary. Trump is the opposite, and that's what I find 90% of the time. People who can't bring themselves to vote for Trump still have not looked at Trump's policies. Do this. On today's show page on iSpyRadio.com, we have a link to Trump's speech at Gettysburg. It will only take about 30 minutes to listen to. It is one of the best pro-America speeches I've heard in a long time. Go listen to that, and I guarantee that if you want what's best for America, after listening to that speech, you'll be glad and proud to vote for Donald Trump. I personally believe that if Trump gets elected, we are in for an incredible American renaissance. Of making America great again, yes. Because we'll have a president who truly loves America again. That's the leadership we need. Believing in the best of America. I trust you'll make the right decision. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a faith that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.